Wheel 26. Yes, related to this, of course, is the, you know, you were saying about the vehicles which were supplied and not always appropriate, and of course you had that very good example of your stretch limos in the Sudan. And do you think this is, you know, part of the problem of helping third world countries, that perhaps it's not always appreciated, their methods? I was thinking of this lady that you had from the FAO and her visit to you.
No, I think that Sudan Rural Training Centre, obviously, wherever you go, you want to try and raise the standard of local people, whether it's in agriculture or feeding and home economics. But you can't start them on the higher level of equipment until you go through the lower level and see how it leads on to the higher level. We didn't have electricity there, but you see, if I was in an area where they've got gas or electricity, either bottled gas or electricity, you couldn't take a group from a really rural village and put them onto gas and electricity immediately, because A, they would leave the gas on, and B, they would burn themselves on the electricity. And so you always had to go through their own level to get up to where you would like them to go. I mean, it's just the same as taking a kid from the kindergarten and finishing up in university, except that it's on practical things in instead. And I think that a lot of the very highly trained and highly qualified people who are charging around the world, not, I think, probably so quite so much today as 10, 15 years ago, they were highly qualified. They had learnt everything on modern equipment, the very latest modern equipment, and they then thought that they could transpose that immediately onto women who had probably done no cooking except on three or four sticks out in the yard with a pot on the top. And you can't go from that straight up to gas and electricity. You've got to go through appropriate technology, so to use the word that's in on it, and you try and take what they do locally. For instance, take Africa again, a great many African women knew how to put some mud together to make a little stove that would then have a pot on the top of it and would work quite well. But the appropriate technology there is that instead of having mud, which if the kettle overflows, the whole stove disappears, you mix your mud with some cement, and you don't have to use an awful lot, so it needn't be all that expensive, and you can share it between several women in the village, and you can make a solid stove instead of a transient stove. That is one of your intermediate ways. Then you could then, having got your one pot on your stove, you then make your stove a bit bigger, again using the more solid stuff. You make it a bit bigger, and you have a slow boiler, a middle boiler, and a top boiler. And then from that, you go on to finding a petrol can somewhere and taking the top off and half filling it with sand and putting it probably over the middle boiler. And you've then got an oven. But you've done it with things that they can get hold of, that they know, that they can understand. And then once you've got them sort of there, you can go straight on. I can give you a very good example of this. When I was in Malaya, we used to do nearly all our biscuits. They all wanted cakes, they all wanted biscuits. All the villages, the Malay villages, wanted cakes and biscuits. And the only way you could do it was in petrol tin cans. And you got used to be able to use petrol tin cans with wood underneath. But I went back to one of those villages when about 15, 20 years later, when they had got electricity and gone into the village. And there was one of the women was giving a cookery class on an electric stove to the same women that I had been dealing with a petrol tin can, because they had progressed from one to the other. And but you can't do it all at once. It's got to be a slow process. And that this particular FAO woman wanted to put her expertise, and she was an expert woman. She wanted to put it in at her level and not at the women's level. We had a meeting in Kenya, where we had an FAO woman came to that. She was from South America or somewhere, and she was absolutely wonderful. She was FAO. She got God knows how many degrees and qualifications in food works, and she could take it straight at the bottom level. She was quite brilliant. I think her name was Katie, if I remember rightly. And she really was quite brilliant. And she got the Africans exactly where she wanted them immediately, because she could deal with them at their level and not at that level. It's something which it's very difficult to come in halfway through a career at top level and expect to get down to the bottom. I was lucky in that I had bottom experience very early on. And so, I mean, it started in our own villages here before the war, at bottom level. And then you can, again, and you can build up, or you can go back if you've got to go back. But if you start halfway up or at the top, it's very difficult to get back to the bottom. And I think this is one of the places where a lot of the top-notch organisations in the world, or the best-paying organisations in the world, where they just don't get down low enough. And you've got to take them at their level. I mean, you can't go into a village where there's only two onions in the market and try and do a cookery class on an electric stove. It's just as simple as that. And I was always rather touched, actually, because while I was with the World YWCA as a full-time staff, I did quite a lot of my work in Africa, and I became very, very African file, or whatever you call it. And my boss, who was an American, who is absolutely the salt of the earth, she also had a soft spot for Africa. She didn't. She could deal with the whole of the world, but she and I always remember, because she and I both left the World Organization at about the same time, and I remember talking to an African, I don't know, Tanzania or somewhere down there, and the African woman said, "But if you and Elizabeth are both leaving, who's going to speak for us?" And I always felt that was a compliment, which is why I've always been glad when the World has offered me a chance to go back on a short-term consultancy back into Africa since, because I've been able to pick up on a lot of things.
This, you know, the YWCA, which you spent so much of your life with, the development of that organisation, it seems to have been very successful from what you were saying, the work it's done in different parts of the world, particularly the third world.
We've had some very sensible, women organising it, and I think the big asset of the worldwide, and I've met this because I've also played with the International Council of Women. I've also done some work for them. I've also done some work for the International Association of University Women. And I've also done a lot of work with the Associated Country in the World, who are all at world level. And now I've lost my train of thought.
The why, you know, the success of the why.
Why has always been a success is that it has been very thorough in its training of whatever they were, whether it was the cook or the public relations officer or the education officer or whatever. The Y has always been very, very thorough wherever it's gone in. But once it feels fairly safe with it, it's left them to it. And I was always very pleased that when I first started mucking about mostly with the YWCA, that I went in as an advisory secretary, not as an administrative secretary. Whereas the YM, I think, is still doing some administrative. Whereas I always felt that whoever was the local administrative secretary was the one who really knew. She may have wanted a hell of a lot of help and a lot of advice, but she was the one who ultimately the buck stopped at. And therefore, and I think that was the Y attitude everywhere. We disposed of administrative secretaries long before a lot of the other NGOs did, and left it to locals to be administrative, and we could be the advisory. I got a sample of that in Dawn, where I was at a meeting, at the executive meeting there, and with my colleague and my Arab colleague, and she and I agreed on something, and we disagreed with what the executive were wanting to do. And because I was an advisory secretary and not an administrative secretary, they asked me to leave. They asked her to leave too. We both left, actually, because we were standing out together against the executive. But if I had been an administrative secretary, they couldn't have done that. They did it to her because they had ultimate power over her, you see, being local. But because I was advisory, they could chuck me out. So we went and bathed in the Dead Sea, I remember. But I was administrative in Malaya. We couldn't manage it. I was administrative in Korea. But since then, I think I've always been in an advisory capacity, not an administrative capacity, which is much more difficult, but is better for them in the long run, because it means that they've got to take the responsibility. Mm.
From what you've been saying also, you know, right through the interview, that some of your, the young women that you would have sort of brought into the Y, they have achieved very high positions, is that right?
Oh, yes, they have. They've gone on to government positions, commercial positions, NGO positions, I mean, I'm trying to think how many YWCA trained people finished up running the Girl Guides. I mean, it was that kind of thing. And I can think of at least three government ministers who were Y trained. In one Philippines, one in Zimbabwe, one in Zambia, and they went through our hands. And like, but then on the other hand, it's not only the Y, because when I was in Malaya, I was working with the Women's Institute, not with the YWCA, and again there, we were able to bring on some of the local people to other levels, like little Tumpu Ziza, who I plucked out of the hills, and she finished up as the assistant treasurer for the Associated Countrymen in the World. Well, when you give them a chance, I can give you a very good example of this. If you don't mind, it's not altogether short. I got while I was working at the headquarters of Y, I went down to what was then Rhodesia, apartheid Rhodesia, to run I was down there for 3 months, but I was to run a fortnight's international conference at there was one mixed university there, and I was able to do it there. And there was me, and I had a South African helper and a Rhodesian helper. And that was, we were running, and we had about 35 or 40 people there, resident, for a fortnight on this conference, from different parts of Africa. And the first night when we all got together, and I just said quite firmly to everybody that we were not able to run this conference unless the people who'd come in were able to help. And Joyce Soroki from South Africa was a great buddy of mine, and she and I sat down and we took each member, each person who came to that conference, and we gave them all a job to do. It might only have been putting out the chairs, it might have been taking away the chairs, it might have been helping the washing up or laying the thing, but everybody who came to that meeting had a job to do. And the very last one of all, I remember, was a little woman who came from a country somewhere, and we almost ran out of things that we could do. And finally I said, oh, I know, you can look after the first aid box. And I went through the first aid box with her, and I said, now, keep an eye on what happens. At the end of the conference, the university bursar came in and said that she hadn't kept a record of the meals that we'd had, both for our people and for visitors. So she would have to do a guesswork. So with great pride, I said, oh, Julie, you've got the list of that, haven't you? Will you bring it over, please? And she had everything, the coffees, the lunches, the suppers, the lot. And we could hand it over to the bursar, and that was heavy. And we could do that with several things that we were that they had done their stuff, they knew their stuff. And ultimately we came to the little woman with the first aid box, and she said, well, I gave out 3 aspirins and a vegetable wax, and there were 3 plasters to go on cuts, and there was a little bit of bandage, and how many aspirins did I say? Oh yes, there were 4. Yes, or I think we gave out 3 aspirins, and she got the whole lot, and she was so proud of herself. They were all proud of themselves, I think, because they had been given responsibility, and the responsibility had been followed up. It wasn't just a question of giving responsibility and then saying, "Oh, get on with it." It had been followed up so that they could show that they had done what they were asked to do. And it was incredible. It was a wonderful finish to that meeting. That they all said what they'd been able to do with what they'd done. And I mean, one was able to say, either Joyce or I was able to say, it was wonderful because the chairs were all out. Oh yes, and you put the water out for the speaker, didn't you? And we were able to go right through it and say what they'd been able to do. And they none of them had done anything like it before. Had time on that meeting. Joyce and I, at the end of that meeting, we had time enough to really make sure that everybody knew what they'd been doing.
How about the International Council of Women? How did that sort of rate as being an effective organisation, you know, with the Third World in particular?
I went to one of their conferences. I had to do something for something. Why did I go? I went to Tehran when they had an International Council of Women conference. And the Council of Women is mostly townsfolk. It was a town organisation. Which is why the Associated Country of the World started, because they wanted to deal with rural women, whereas the International Council of Women were dealing with towns women. And it was quite high powered. I don't know that we actually did anything. We had one of the Shah's daughters as the chairman of the meeting, and then the princess something or other. The International Council of Women I found in at least three countries, has ultimately become the weapon of the political party in power. And I think that, as far as I was concerned, when I realised that was the kind of thing that was happening, I didn't volunteer for any more work or any more conferences or anything with them.
Which countries were they?
Certainly Sudan. There were three that I bumped into. Oh, Ghana. And one of the Pacific ones where it had become... I'm not sure, it wasn't Australia, but don't quote me on that. because I'm not absolutely certain, but they had quite a lot of influence in the Australian government at one time, the International Council of Women. Because they were in the towns and they would get at it, whereas the Associated Country of the World, until you got verbal radio messages and that kind of thing, were really too isolated to be a power in the land. They ultimately did become so because they were country women associations, it worked in the end. But certainly, you see, Ghana, it was utterly under Kwame Nkrumah, and it certainly was under the Arab situation in Sudan. But the thing is, you can't write off any effort of any description anywhere, because it may not be what you think ought to be happening, but if an effort of some sort is being made, even if it's only a grain of salt rubbing off, something rubs off. And I wouldn't like to write off any goodwill, any description, anywhere. Whatever the mistakes are, whatever goes wrong, even whatever taste is left in the mouth afterwards, I wouldn't like to write anything off.
You've obviously, worked alongside a lot of NGOs, sort of humanitarian ones. Are there any sort of outstanding ones that you recall?
Every time.
Salvation Army?
Every time. I don't know. No, because they've all got some part to play of some. You see, the university women, which are universal, just about, their big philanthropic effort is they give scholarships and relevant scholarships, either in the country of origin or somewhere else where the learning is going to be relevant. That is their thing. SALIAC is humanity. The humanity in its very broadest sense is SALIAC. The YWCA, I suppose, is largely, over the years, it's developed into an organisation that aims at self-sufficiency and good administration locally. The Associated Countrymen of the World have probably got the biggest goodwill universally, but tend to be slightly muddled in their administration. They've got an enormous membership of rurally oriented organisations, but whereas I can't speak for the University of Women, I can speak for International Council of Women. Right from the beginning, when we became a world organisation in the 1890s, and right from the beginning, when we have had a conference or a training course of any description, we have tried to see that we had an equal balance of black, white, brown and yellow. Whereas the Associated Countrymen of the World, you go to one of their conferences if you can afford to go. I think they are gradually beginning to try and provide sponsorships and bursaries, but that was the thing that I found the biggest shock after the first world meeting of YWAS I met, which was in England, but it was a world meeting, and it was a fairly well balanced black, white and yellow and brown. And I went from that to one of the Associated Countrymen of the World ones, which was up in Edinburgh. And it was almost white. Even South Africa, which I said before, with South Africa representing Africa for years and years and years, and it was a white that did it, you see. And the same thing with the International Council of Women. They tended, I don't know what they're like now, but they did then tend to be, when I was with them, they were working with alongside them, they were mostly white, because again it's a question of who could afford it. Whereas we have always gone out of our way to make sure that we've got a mixture of everything. To the extent that right from the beginning, we have had any international meeting in the world, we have had a quota that however many members you had, if you had over 1,000 members, you couldn't send over whatever your quota was for the percentage that was allowed for that. So we've always had a good mixture right from the beginning. And it's paid off, of course. It's paid off in that we are, the YWCA is a very good movement, no doubt about it. But I suppose, Save the Children is a pretty sound one. They've got a pretty sound administration. And I've always had great respect for what they've done, because they've done it. They've done some good work medically, mostly medically around the world.